This is tape 5, the afternoon of January 6, 1961. Dave, you're talking about the Indians.
Well, I was trying to relate our treatment of the Indian, our abuse of the Indian, and our neglect of the Indian with our deep concern for an imported body of slaves whom we utilized and incorporated into our Southern society and then fought a war over their liberation while we still continue to neglect the people from whom we took everything away.
Well, I think there's this difference. Those people who were the laboring force of the South and who were the slaves were imported into the country from Africa, and they were exploited to some extent, bound to have been. And then the industrial North began to fear that the cheap labor of the South might interfere with their industrial development. And they became the agitators, which stirred up people to have an interest in the slaves of the South with the idea of having them to be free, because everybody with any common sense, no matter what his position was or where he lived, knew that slavery was wrong. In the case of the Indians, they were the owners and the occupiers of the land, and they were treated as a conquered people because their land was taken away from them and distributed by the government of the United States to settlers, homesteaders, and people of that sort. And it was an entirely different approach, because the Indians, in great many instances, had nations of their own, and they were fighters. And whenever the whites infringed on the treaties that they made, and they broke every treaty they made with every set of the Indians, why, they'd fight. And they didn't mind slipping up and killing them at home and abroad with arrows or whatever they had and scalping them. And it became a very unpopular situation when some family would be massacred by the Indians, although the Indians were only protecting their ownership of property which has been taken away from them. And I think that answers the question as nearly as we can. Now, you take the conquest of the two great empires south of us, Mexico and Peru, was done by a bunch of cutthroat Spaniards for the gold which those people had. And their empires were upset, taken over by the Spaniards, and the Indians were enslaved. We didn't enslave the Indians because the Indians wouldn't be enslaved. An Indian would rather die than to be anybody's slave. He considered himself just as good as any two white men, and in most instances they were. And I think that explains the situation. The Negroes were slaves and had been slaves from time immemorial, and they still are in some parts of Africa and Southeast Asia. And only the Zulus in South Africa have been the fighters in that line of people, and those fighters are highly respected by the white people and have always been.
Are you suggesting now that the Negroes are inferior to the Indian?
Yes, I am.
Were or are?
Are.
especially in their quality to stand up for their rights.
That's
and
correct.
Fight.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. And they had no chance, of course, to stand up and fight, and that's the reason we have to fight for them. And those that are coming through this period and are being educated and informed on what's back of all this, they make good soldiers. Some of the best regiments we had in the last two wars have been Negro regiments, and they're good fighters when they have leadership. But among themselves, they have not yet produced the leaders, and that's what the trouble is, except in the Zulus in South Africa.
Well, now, the Indians were not only unable to protect themselves against the tremendous influx of power that we have been able to muster, but they've been cheated, and as you say, we've never kept a treaty with them that we made, and they also didn't keep most of the treaties with us, or did they?
Oh, yes. The treaties were always broken by the whites.
By the whites.
They were always broken by the whites, but they had some very great leaders. They're some of the greatest leaders that this country ever produced. They were the leaders of the Indian tribes, and sometime I hope somebody will go into that very situation. Now, the Iroquois had a wonderful government, which our is, you might say, is modeled, because the Iroquois government was a republic. It was an alliance between six nations, or five, when it became six. And it was one of the good governments in the country. Well, you take the tall Indian who was the head of the Michigan and Wisconsin.
The Huron.
No, I'll tell you his name in a minute. The stove factory named after
Pontiac.
Pontiac, right. And the other old Indian up there was the same kind, Tecumseh. And
Tecumseh.
Then you take Geronimo down in the southwest, and Sitting Bull and Crazy Horse of the Sioux, two of the great leaders, and Chief Joseph, who put the United States cavalry over an 1,800-mile march and took his women and children along with him, which is a record that's never been equaled even by the March of the 10,000, or Donovan's March. Joseph outmarched them all.
But Tecumseh was no slouch either.
No, he was murdered. Shot in the back. And it's just too bad that somebody doesn't take it in hand and write the history of those Indian tribes and what they were up against and why they fought so long to preserve their rights and never did get them preserved. Well, you take down in the southeast, the Cherokees and the Chickasaws were simply moved off their lands and brought over here, and the Osages, and brought over here to Oklahoma, which nobody thought was any good. It turned out to be one of the richest places in the world, made most of them rich, and then the white men stepped in, tried to cheat them out of everything they had, and succeeded in most cases.
Were Seminoles and some of they really all got
put. Well, the Seminoles still hadn't surrendered. They're still down there. I was in the settlement of the camp of the chief of the Seminoles.
Osages? Is it an Osage?
No, Seminoles.
No, Seminoles.
They never did surrender.
Oh, I see. Well, there's some.
The Seminoles were brought down here. The Seminoles are in
Florida. But there's some in Oklahoma, too.
Well, they brought a few of them, but the rest of them wouldn't come. And they still hadn't surrendered.
Yes, there's Seminole County in Oklahoma.
Yeah, I know.
But it's an interesting study.
Now, Mr. President, the whole point of the question is this, that here we have a succession of presidents, and certainly in the case of Lincoln, a great humanitarian and a passionate approach. And yet every one of our Indian bureau setups in Washington was saddled with crooks and cheats. There was nobody, they didn't have an honest man in any one of those bureaus.
Once in a while you'd catch on and you'd have an honest man, and then the difficulties would be exposed, and for a while things would be all right.
It didn't
last. There were several of them that were in line and tried the best to do justice to the Indians, but they didn't have much chance because the crooks were always standing at the door to take whatever was loose. And the Indians didn't understand the approach of the white men in their trades, and they got cheated every time they got into a trade of the white
men. Until 1924, they didn't even get general citizenship status, did they?
No. The Indians, not taxed, was always mentioned in revenue laws. And Indians not taxed.
What was that, Mr. President?
Indians not taxed. You see that in all the revenue laws up to a short time ago.
Well, now, there has never been really a concerted effort made to square accounts with them or to do right by them on a presidential level, has it?
On any other level, no.
Why is that?
Oh, I don't know. Not the slightest idea, but somebody ought to take it on itself to outline the history of what happened to the inhabitants of the North American continent and also the South American continent. And it would make one of the most interesting stories that's ever been
written. You were kind of busy as president with a couple of wars, one to finish up and one to prosecute, and then a major action in Korea, and you were pretty well occupied. But
I vetoed a bill that would have taken everything the Indians in Nevada and had left if McCarran had got his bill through, but I vetoed that and I saved him that much.
What was that?
Oh, I forget the name of it, but they were trying to arrange it so
this was another
all the lands around Tahoe would be turned loose for settlement, and the idea was to take it away from the Indians.
Oh, that Lake Tahoe region?
Yeah.
Well, now...
May I suggest also that unless a problem is immediately pressing on you, quite often you can't even give it consideration because you've got other problems, and I don't think in the development of the country... is this true that there are many presidents didn't have the opportunity?
Well, look what old Crooker, he went out there. He had a good name. And got Sitting Bull and Crazy Horse into a conference and quoted the president and said they'd get what they wanted, and they didn't get anything they wanted, and they're both assassinated. both Crazy Horse and Sitting Bull were assassinated by Indian police. They were hired to work for the soldiers.
Well, you made three rather, certainly two widely scattered moves involving actions that had to do with justice on the highest historic plane. One was your campaign in 48 on your civil rights approach to the South. The other one, more remote, when you undertook to restore or express the conscience of the free world towards Israeli in encouraging a situation there to where peoples have been ravaged. But it must have occupied your mind, too, that you had a third problem here with
Indians. I was looking after the Indian rights all the time. Whenever any bill came up, it looked to me like it was for their exploitation, it got vetoed. And you find, I think, that there were at least three of them that were vetoed while I was present because they were trying to take what lands the Indians had left away from them. I think one of them affected Chief Joseph in his settlement in Montana. I'm not sure.
Do you have any approach in mind, or does it ever occur to you, as to how we could go about acquitting our conscience with respect to the Indians?
Can't be done. It's too late. They're all dead.
You
and
mean
those that are not dead have become citizens, and they're not interested.
They're extinct, but there are a whole bunch of them that are still whiling away at some of these reservations and are
you
looking for.
Most of them are rich.
No, not really, most of them?
Yes. You take that up there to Niagara Falls, where they were trying to get the St. Lawrence Seaway through. They had to make a settlement with an Indian tribe up there that's just what's left over of the Iroquois, and they made a good settlement with them. They got what it's coming to them.
Well, they've shrunk in numbers to the point where they're...
Well, they try to civilize them in the darkness of what the old fishing people used to call consumption, TB gets most of them.
They're very susceptible to that.
Very susceptible to that, and they're at the inside all the time, although they're the healthiest race that anyone ever met up with when the white people first came over here.
Well, how would you mark our paper in terms of our treatment of the Indian net?
Zero minus.
You think that's pretty much of a blight on our...
There's any question about it. There's any question about it. It's in the same class with the way the French are treating the Africans.
And it's too late to correct it.
I don't think anything can be done.
And what's left is in pretty good shape?
Well, they're taking very good care of what's left. The conscience was awakened, I think, 30, 40 years ago, and they're beginning to take things. They've had two or three wonderful Indian agents in this century that have looked after the welfare of the Indians. Now, you have a whole number of Eskimos in Alaska that are be properly taken care of, I think.
Well, they're still living behind barbed wires, aren't they, a lot of them?
I don't think so.
Oh, they have fences around some of those reservations.
Well, they may have, but the reservations that have been assigned to them, you take the Indians in Mexico and in New Mexico and Arizona, have one of the best reservations in the country, and they've been protected. Nobody's allowed to go in there and take it away from them.
Of course, a lot of them are very useful. California would be all burned up if these Indians weren't flown in each time there was a fire. They're the ones who can put them out. There's nobody out there.
They know how to put it out.
They know how to put out those fires.
I think they're being justly treated now, as near justice as can be given to them after they've been exported to death.
Are they being assimilated?
Yes, to some extent, they are.
This is the end of tape 5, the afternoon of January 6, 61. This is tape number 1 of the morning of January the 7th, 1961, the President, Norris Hillman, President. Now, Mr. President.
The immediate question that confronted the nation was what to do in this Reconstruction period in terms of any controls of anything. And apparently we were in a period where everyone went in whatever direction he wanted to go and there was no control.
That's true. If Andrew Johnson had succeeded in his program, there would have been no bitterness in the South. But the radicals in control of the old man in Pennsylvania, Thad Stevens, created a situation which made the South a conquered part of the war between the states, and that wasn't what either Lincoln or Johnson wanted.
But the South began to get industrialized pretty quickly after that, and in the course of time, short time, industries were being set up by the same Bourbons who were operating the mills, and they created a kind of an industrial slavery down there for a while, didn't they?
Well, the South never got set up industrially until after the War with Spain and the First World War. And it took a long time for them to understand that slave labor had long ago ceased. And the reconstruction of the South didn't really begin until after the First World War. And then when the mills and things that were set up in the South on account of cheap labor were really a going concern, then union labor moved in and caused them to do just exactly what had been done in the North, that the people who worked had an interest in what was turned out by the factories. And it's been a very good thing for the South.
But the South was totally bankrupt. It had absolutely no means of any kind. It had, the banks were all gone, the mortgages were all defaulted on. The landowners found it necessary to disgorge themselves of a lot of the land, and some land distribution began to take place almost immediately after the conclusion of the war, didn't it?
It didn't work. It didn't work at all.
Why didn't it work?
Because it was the wrong approach to the thing. If the program that Lincoln and Johnson had intended to put forth had been put into effect, those things could have been met without any serious difficulties with the people who had been in control of all, the land. But when they treated the South as a conquered territory, then the trouble began. And that's what caused it. And it's taken, 40, 50 years to get the thing worked out. And now the South is in industrial competition with all the rest of the country, and they're doing a good job.
But
they have to pay wages that are living to the people for whom they are running these factories.
But to get back to that immediate period, there was total chaos, yet some of the mills, some of the textile mills began to get to assemble down there, and they began to actually make textiles down there, didn't they?
Not for a long time.
Not for some time.
Not for a long time.
Well, now, then the rumors started down there that every Negro was to get, was it 40 or 60 acres of land?
Yes,
and a mule.
That's right. That's what the people under the old man who was in charge of the Radical Republicans, Thad Stevens, couldn't happen.
And it didn't happen then, Mr. President?
No, it didn't happen. Never did happen.
Of course, you made a suggestion yesterday, and I talked that, which I think is historically very important to note, that had Lincoln lived, he certainly would have aided the Negroes, the emancipated Negroes, to find new homes and places out in the wilderness where there was ample room and ample land.
Well, he may have. But the thing that he would have done would have been to make it a program that would have caused the Southerners who had been in control to go along with him and help put it over. And that would have taken care of the nigger freedmen and the poor white trash, as they called them in the South.
Well, they were almost as bad. They were almost as bad off as the Negroes themselves were.
They were worse off.
Well, now, would you judge that whole situation as a case of failure to follow through with a program of any kind of sense to make the South into reorganize the South into a going institution?
Yes, of course. But eventually it worked out, because the Southerners could not be stepped on and stay stepped on. And in the long run, all right, but then it could have been done much earlier without the vicious feeling that was created in the South, if we'd had been in charge of the program at that time, who knew where they were going and who had kind hearts.
In other words, what you're saying, Mr. President, that no scheme of Reconstruction is workable, or would have been workable, without the Wolf to have been defeated,
yes,
and who support they would have to develop the
conclusively topic. Proven after the First and Second World Wars in Europe.
Now, a very interesting thought looms here. The Constitution having been conceived as a temperate document with broad scopes, doesn't the war itself and the Reconstruction prove that society was not geared to any radicalism from either side? And as soon as radicalism began, we were in.
Well, of course that's right. And common sense and an approach to the situation in which we were faced in, a 100 years ago, in all probability could have been met. But any Monday morning quarterback can see what ought to have been done. The captain, he's trying to tell what would have been done if so-and-so had happened. And if he'd been there, in all probability, he'd been on the side that caused the trouble.
Well, may I ask this? One of the problems that a historian seems to have is the problem of looking objectively at anything, but to realize what passions were evoked in the different protagonists and in the antagonists. In other words, if he overlooks the passion which was aroused, he can't really get an objective picture.
Oh, that's right. Not if he's affected by it, he can. But if he isn't, he can. What is it? There's no use in looking back after decisions have been made and trying to decide what might have been done. The only situation that can be met is when it comes up at the time, and the executive who has to make the decision ought to have as much information as possible and make that decision. And all the talk about what might have happened is not worth anything any more than what a Monday morning quarterback can do to a football game after it's over.
Well, aren't you then suggesting, Mr. President, that just looking back over years later from a cool, detached point of view, you overlook the passions and the currents which also come into the picture?
That's true. And anybody can figure out what ought to have been done after it's over. It takes somebody with the ability and the nerve to make decisions when it comes time to make them. And all the talk about what might have been, you know, there's a poem called "The Saddest of All Sad Words Are These It Might Have Been." I think Whittaker wrote that, I'm not sure.
Well, of course, historians don't deal with what might have been. They always deal with what they think had been. But their judgment.
What they thought ought to have been done at the time.
Well, that's where they make an appraisal of the actions or the failures of those who headed up governments. But we were then a kind of a conglomerate nation struggling with all kinds of problems. Of a very diffuse nature. We were having our Wild West trying to settle in those days. We were having runaway industrial license. We were having the railroads blasting through with all kinds of assistance of the government. And we were having a totally abandoned South to itself, to shift for itself as best it knew how, and trusting to only one thing. And that one thing is that some way or other there would be a solution to it in terms of an economic resurgence, which came, the Industrial Revolution.
Which brought about by the South. Nobody else brought it about.
Well, meaning what, sir?
Meaning that the people who had been put in the position of enemies had finally come back and reorganized the people. That Andrew Johnson, long run, it worked out all right, and he's still working out all right.
Well, the better minds of the South for a while were completely out of control and out of government and out of everything.
That's
and,
true.
And in their way came
they
these
were treated as vicious enemies. But they eventually came back into control of things.
Well,
and the South worked out all right. Now it's become an industrial center, which is a rival to the industrial center of the North, which was trying to prevent them from being just that.
But in the meantime, the little intriguing politicians representing the so-called poor white down there did take away control and did foster a lot of the hatred of the Negro, didn't they?
No, they didn't take away the control. The control was taken away when the radicals put the Negroes in control of the South without any of their educational qualifications, making it possible to run a government. And as soon as that period was over, then they had no more trouble either with the Negroes or with the poor whites.
Well, what do you, well, again, to get iffy, what should they have done? Should there have been a period of transition? Somebody had to...
Well, of course, there should have been a period of transition. If Lincoln had lived and if Andrew Johnson's program had been carried out, there wouldn't have been any trouble at all.
What would have been done, sir?
They would have rehabilitated the South, just as the Allies rehabilitated the enemies after the First World War and the Second World War. But that had to come along with the South as an example of what ought not to be done.
What you're saying, Mr. President, too, is that putting Negroes in charge so swiftly after their emancipation was certainly not fair to the Negroes or to anybody because they lacked education and experience.
It was one of the worst things that was ever done for the rehabilitation of the slaves. And when that was done, it's taken years and years and years to get the thing worked out so that people will understand that education and experience is the best thing that can happen to any race or color that has not had that experience beforehand.
And you feel very strongly that this was a very vital mistake and a misstep.
Oh, it was one of the worst things that ever happened in the country when old Pat Stevens took charge of things.
Well, you take the position that we were, this was not a racial problem, this was more or less a problem of backward people, and some of the whites were as backward as the Negroes were then.
No, it was a situation brought about by the radical Republicans at the time that Pat Stevens was in control, to be sure that they stayed in control. Well, he kept them in control through the Grant and the administration that followed Grant, but it didn't work out.
This is the end of tape one, the morning of January 7, 1961.